Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, we are back at it another week here. Last few days before Christmas break. Everyone's shopping and everything, and I've got a little Christmas story I'm going to tell here during this program. When I was a kid, you know, I was loved. I know I was loved, but it was a tough time. I tell you, there were some very interesting moments in my childhood and some really good times that I was able to forge really who I am, the things that really... Christmas time to me, I think about my family. I think about the love that we have for each other. I think about all of those things more than gifts, more than presents. To me, I've never been one of those who was about Christmas gifts. Maybe it's because, you know, when you don't get so much, you don't build up a desire so much. Me, it seemed like I would get one, maybe two gifts for Christmas, and I'd be happy. Sometimes I would just get clothes for school or something like that. I'd be happy with that, too. But we do seem to get lost in the meaning of Christmas. Definitely the news, not the news, the TV commercials. Everything is about sales. And you know, I'm in the car business, so I understand that. There's different seasons for sales, and definitely Christmas is Christmas. So many businesses are made during the Christmas and the tax season sales that go on, and I know that that's what makes the world go round, and our economy is driven by people buying things, and I don't know. It's just sometimes to me the meaning gets lost, and we don't know why anymore. But you know, it's because we didn't take a stand on a lot of things. But the battle that goes on to remove Christmas, remove the meaning of Christmas, the symbolism of what Christmas is all about. And I'm not talking about the presents. I'm talking about Jesus Christ and Christianity in general. Christians in this country, yes, we're the majority. We are in a battle against people who really are trying to take us down. They're using our own government to do it. They're trying to limit a lot of things that Christians do here in this country. And it's an interesting time we're living in. But you know, Christmas is just a few days away, and I got really good news tonight. Visiting with someone who's been in this industry, the music entertainment industry, for a while, and he's now in politics. And I was excited to be invited to join the program over at Patriot Insight. So I'll be taking this show to Patriot Insight and helping build the roster up over there. Very excited about that. Thank you, Matthew Ricks. He's I feel like we're brothers or something, kindred spirit for sure. I will be doing a program with them, 1 hour show, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Central Time. So from 10 to 11 Central Time, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you can listen to my live program on Patriot Insight. So. Tonight's program is, I'm calling it the Hispanic Wake-Up Call. you know, I don't have, like, music or, you know, I don't have Spanish music or the crazy commercials that are, you know, traditional in the Hispanic marketing. I don't have any spokespeople with really tight, short dresses that can help me spread my message. it's just me. It's just it's me, and it's a handful of people who not just me. I'm just saying, there's a handful of people who understand that this sleeping giant we're calling the Hispanic vote, when it truly comes to life. Now, we know that in presidential general election type politics that the Hispanic vote has been growing and has been contributing more and more to the outcome of the presidential race. And what we have come to learn is this last election with President Obama, he gained 70% of the Hispanic vote. Well, number one, we have to think of what is the size of the Hispanic vote? How many people truly does that consist of? Well, there was a recent look in here on the Pew website, the Pew Hispanic website. There's an article that was written, and I'm going to probably go over this here. There are five takeaways about the 2014 Latino vote. Latino, Hispanic, whatever, all the same thing. They kind of get interchanged. But Hispanic have 8% of the nation's voters. Oh, 8% of the nation's voters. We have a long way to go, truly, before we are in the category of the Anglo voter, or even the black vote, the Asian vote. So let's break these down. In 2010, these kind of going a little older stats here, but 31%. Let's see, these are midterm elections in 2010. 31% of Hispanics voted compared to 48% of whites, 44% of blacks, 31% of Asians. Yes, we are growing in numbers, but we're not really growing at the proportionate rate at the polls. We're still way underrepresented. There's a huge population of Hispanics who I promise you they are God-fearing, hard-working individuals. I'm talking about United States citizens, people who can vote legally. They're just really not concerned right now. It's you know, yes, life is tough in a lot of places, but if you're a hard worker and you're not willing to lay down and just give up, this country you can make a pretty good living if you're willing to work. And it turns out Hispanics are willing to work. They're willing to do the work. A lot of people are not, and I can assure you that is true. I hear a lot of times people say that the issue with immigration is that these people are taking jobs, or that they're being paid less, and so therefore Americans can't compete for those jobs. Look, I know companies that are paying $20, $25 an hour to people who, you know, don't have proper documents, and these are people who all across the country, people are paying undocumented residents. Whether however they pay, have decided to pay them, they're paying them. They're paying them because they need the work done, and they can't find the work among the American citizen. I'm in the car business. I've seen trends develop. I have seen more people get on welfare, more applicants who are on Social Security. Healthy, able-bodied, no problems. They just maybe don't want to work. I don't really know what their game is or what their life plan is. But I know that in the Hispanic community, these people work for the most part. Yeah, there are some bad apples in all demographics. There are. But You know, I'm not just making this up. It's known that Hispanic people work. They're not lazy when it comes to working. But so with that said, you're busy. These people, maybe they go to church, maybe they don't. For the most part, they believe in God. For the most part, they're Catholics. They believe in Jesus, not just God. They believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and trust me, they try to live by the Ten Commandments. So, if they're living their lives according to the Ten Commandments, and they're paying their bills, and they're moving along and doing what they need to do, they're not paying attention to politics. Politics is for someone else. I used to think that politics were for people in suits and ties, people who were lawyers or experts in different fields of, we have doctors, we have all the people who make up our congressional house and Senate. But what I came to realize, and I used to think that these people were honorable, that they had good intentions, and that they could be trusted. But unfortunately, with the election of Barack Obama, I learned that the people can be sold easily, and it can be sold on somebody who fills them with rhetoric. And Hispanics have been, unfortunately, to me, this is what I think it is. I know it's not the only issue, but for the most part, and I've been saying that a lot tonight, I know it. Hispanics have been sold on this immigration proposal. It's been happening for a long time. It's not just Obama. It's previous presidents. They've all had to deal with the immigration issue, and it's always been swept under the rug. And Hispanics have built up a resentment. This resentment, in my opinion, is growing and impacting the Democrat Party more now than it ever has. It's like being told, yes, you're next. But then, like if you go to a restaurant, you put your name on the list, and you know that you're here at a certain time. You see new people arrive, and they just showed up, and they put their name on the list, and other people came in, they put their names on the list, and before long, everyone's seated but you. And it's kind of like that. Eventually, you have to stand up, you go up to the host, and you say, "Oh, what's going on here? We said first available. You've seated two or three people ahead of us." Well, that is what Hispanics are starting to feel like, in my view, of the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party has been putting them off for so long that they're starting to resent the being put off. What are they going to do about it? What? I mean, will they jump ship? Will they come to the Republican side? Will they consider a Republican candidate? Well, that depends. It depends on what that candidate is saying, and it depends on whether or not that candidate has what their view is on immigration. We can look back to Mitt Romney's campaign. You can look back to McCain's campaign, and the idea of self-deportation as a Republican Party platform is unrealistic. It proves, it shows that we're not even willing to put forth the effort to develop a real plan. That says is, we don't care. And if we don't care about this major priority issue among the Hispanic people, then what else are we, what else are we going to not care about? If we don't care about this, what will we care for? And so we as a Republican Party have been going along thinking that it's all about jobs and economy. And, you know, I think hope and change can go a long way, but within the Hispanic community, immigration goes further. Having a willingness to rationally discuss the issue without immediately calling any option amnesty. Well, there's plenty of talk show hosts who have replaced the cert. You know, in fact, people are saying that these 11, 12, 20 million undocumented illegal residents who are here right now. Some people say that they need to be deported right away. Any of them, all of them, any and all, pick them up, round them up, doesn't matter. Send in whatever forces. Go, do it now. And then you have other people who say, well, let's just separate. Let's separate the good ones from the bad ones. Let's create a documentation plan, some way to identify who's here and screen or filter the good from the bad. Well, anything other than immediate deportation, according to people like Rush Limbaugh, I hear him all the time. He's replaced the word documentation or identification or something like that with amnesty. So anyone who wants to do anything other than deport is for amnesty. And if you're for amnesty, you're the devil. If you're for amnesty, then you're against grandmothers and children. If you are for amnesty, then you want bad things to happen to American citizens, and that's how they paint any other option. Donald Trump says most of the things that he says. There's only one thing we can do. There's only one way to handle this certain situation. I'm telling you, there are more than one ways to skin a cat. And please don't have all the PETA people calling in on that comment. We have to be a nation of people who can sift through the rhetoric and truly listen in and hone in on the things that might make a difference. And when we're talking about the Hispanic vote, while it is only 8% of the nation's voters, that's not correct. I don't think I said that right. Hispanics made up 8% of the nation's voters, the same as in 2010 and 2006, according to the national exit polls. So, you know, we have to increase that number. I don't know what total percentage Hispanics are of the nation, but I'll bet you it's more than 8%. I just don't think that it's. I just don't think that we're resonating. We're not connecting still. You know, the old saying goes: people don't know how much you don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And all we're showing as a party, because the party leaders, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, these are the presidential candidates I'm talking about, their plan is deportation, mass deportation. eviction out of the country. And so what do the Democrats do to us when we have a candidate who's running on mass roundups and deportation? Well, you can already hear the commercial spots. Hispanics don't want to be involved with people who are going to or who want to deport their family members. Look, I don't want to be held hostage by undocumented residents. We should not be. But to say that every undocumented resident is a criminal, the way Donald Trump is saying every Muslim should not enter this country, they're just extreme. And in my opinion, the Republican Party is not the party of extremism. We have in the primary, and here's where this is why I'm making a challenging the Hispanic community in the primary. The rule of thumb is stay as far to the right as you can, or stay as far to the left as you can, depending on whether you're running in the Democrat or the Republican Party. So to stay furthest to the right means that you're going to gain the far right support. The far right supporters are the most intense. These supporters may not be the majority, but they are very loud. They're well organized, and they can orchestrate a pretty good campaign. Obviously, take a look at what Trump and Cruz. Combine both of their polling numbers, and they are a large percentage of primary voters. Now, if you think that electing extremely, well, I hate to use the word extreme, we'll just say, if you think that electing someone like Donald Trump or Ted Cruz will yield the same type of results in a general election, then you're truly refusing, to acknowledge the reality, the significance on the issue of immigration and the Hispanic vote. I know there's people probably listening to this. I already know them, Tea Party folks. They're listening. They're thinking, that's amnesty. You can't give anyone a break. They've got to get out of here. They got to go back to their own country, start over again. I don't know that they thought that plan all the way through. I hear it a lot, and it sounds good a lot of times. Just hear words like that, it's like music to your ears, but the reality of pulling something like that off, what happens if they don't go? What happens if they don't self-deport? You know, we have to really think about Hispanic vote as something that we want. I mean, do we really want it, or are we just saying we want it? You know, to go after Hispanic votes aggressively in a Republican primary, it's not standard. It's not standard operating procedure. It's actually quite rare. It has to do with dollars and cents. It has to do with where the money is going to go in the campaign. What are you going to invest to draw Hispanics to your campaign? And, Republicans keep talking about deportations. We don't offer solutions. Anytime someone tries to offer a solution, they get beat down. Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh. They just beat them down. No alternatives. And, you know, I just don't know that that's who we are as a nation. I don't know that that's the winning formula. I'm pretty sure the people I talk to I talk to undocumented residents. So I run across them all the time. They actually, believe it or not, can buy cars. They can buy houses. They can do business. They can open businesses. They can do all kinds of things. It's crazy. The systems that are in place that support people who aren't even here illegally. So, you know, let's, one thing I wanted to get to, my next segment here, we're going to talk a little bit about the Democrat Party and why that is a wrong choice and why so many Hispanics, I think, are still going there, and what is the Republican Party doing to get Hispanics to vote in a Republican primary? Because, folks, that's where it's all at. That's where we can make the Hispanic vote really matter. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. We're going to get into it real deep. And I have, looks like I might have a caller on the line. I'm gonna find out here in a second. We're going to go to commercial break and be right back on the other side.
One disease. Millions of lives permanently disrupted. Today, there are over 5 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. But Alzheimer's is taking more than memories. It's taking lives. What few realize is that Alzheimer's kills more people than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. And Alzheimer's is the only disease in the top 10 causes of death that can't be slowed, stopped, or prevented. From 2000 to 2013, while deaths from other diseases decreased significantly, Alzheimer's deaths increased 71%. But equally disturbing, many living with Alzheimer's say they are not being told their diagnosis. While more than 90% of people with the most common types of cancer say they are told their diagnosis, only 45% of people with Alzheimer's or their caregivers say they are told. The economic toll is staggering, too. In 2015, it will cost the nation $226 billion to care for people with Alzheimer's. By 2030, 72 million baby boomers will reach an age of greater risk. The fact is, everyone's at risk for Alzheimer's, even you. But everyone can help, especially you. We're the Alzheimer's Association, the brains behind saving yours. Join us.
All right, we are back from that break. Just a reminder on the Alzheimer's. My mother-in-law has Alzheimer's, and you know, I'm witnessing the effects on the individual who has it, and plus the family. We've got to really rally around the cure, coming up with a solution. We talk about solutions all the time. We need a solution for solving Alzheimer's, and it's a wicked disease. But we are back tonight talking again about wake-up call for Hispanics, trying to gain the Hispanic vote. We're talking about immigration and different issues that are relevant to, I think, gaining the Hispanic vote. And we have some listeners, and we've got a few callers here as well. And I want to have the opportunity. I like to bring callers in and spice things up a little bit, kind of get interesting. Caller, if you would, tell me your name and where you're calling from.
Are you speaking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I spoke to you earlier. Yeah, I'm listening to you, sir, and I've heard everything you said, and you seem like a pretty calm and reasonable guy. So I'm really listening for your solution to the problem. there are a couple of issues. I've followed this issue from a legal standpoint, you know, in the courts. I know you know about all the attorney generals, about 26 of them that sued the federal government for this income tax credit, and also what the states, I'm just stating it as I understood it, the states were saying that the federal government was burdening them with the do you use the term illegal, or do you just say immigrants and you don't make a distinction?
Well, I totally feel like there is a distinction.
Okay,
you know, and there
so
is.
What do you say? I want to speak the language that you speak. So what do you call the people that come here without, you know, proper documentation?
I know that people who are undocumented don't like being called illegal, but I personally...
Right.
I don't have a problem calling someone who's here illegally illegal. To me, that's PC. I try not to live in the PC, but go by PC rules. And so, I mean, I will say undocumented. I will call them. I will say illegal. I'll interchange them, kind of like they interchange Latino and Hispanic. You know, it's to me, it's one and the same. I'll even say whichever you prefer works.
Okay, well, and that's fine. Thank you. The official language is illegal alien. That's the official federal language in terms of immigration language. But, you know, it is a big problem, sir. And I'm listening to you, and I'm trying to understand. You want the Hispanic vote to come out to, in essence, grant amnesty to the illegal/undocumented workers?
No, that's not at all what I'm saying.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I was just. Well, what do you want? I'm interested in knowing. You want them to come out, and you want the Hispanics to come out, Hispanic Americans to come out and vote for what?
I want them to vote for their values. I want them to vote for a candidate in a party that represents more of their values. Know Hispanic.
But what do you want for the? If I just may add, what do you want for the undocumented workers? What do you want for them? You want amnesty?
I want, you know, they live. No, I don't. I don't want amnesty. And you know, that's a good question. So let me ask you.
Okay.
In your opinion, is anything other than deportation considered amnesty?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Well, because that's the rules of every other country. And if you would just reverse it and say, what would Mexico's position be? And I consider myself a gracious type person. And I would even be willing to give them 6 months severance or whatever. They have violated the law. We cannot avoid that. And not only that.
I agree.
Right, and I appreciate that. And not only that, they have jumped in front of people who are petitioning the government the legal way. And I think that would be horrible. Say, Mexican citizens who are coming to America and doing it the right way. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the people who are doing it the illegal way jump ahead of them. How would they feel? I mean,
they shouldn't be allowed to. They shouldn't be allowed to jump in front. Now, here's a couple. There's a few things that are constantly spun on your standard media. Okay. Number one, the way I see it, maybe I'm wrong, but to me, we can have a discussion about this. If you are, say, an American citizen and you steal a pack of gum and you get caught. And you get a ticket or fined or whatever, and you pay your penalty. You go to court and whatever. So you get through that process. You pay your fines or fees. Was that amnesty? If it's not amnesty, it's actually like to me that's not amnesty. You're not forgiven because you technically paid the price for the crime, so to speak. And in my opinion, we should filter out people who are here right now. And I look at this as a national security issue that we need to know who's here. And that if we offer a window of time, and we say that if you're here illegally, that you come forward and identify yourself, pay fines, pay fees, pay whatever you need to pay, do your background checks, you pay for those, do your biometrics, you pay for those. And if you're willing to go through all those steps, verify your residence, verify your employment, and come out the other end, basically we'll say clean with a check mark, that person should get a temporary legal status and placed at the end of the line for legal citizenship, which may come 10, 15 years down the road. But no citizenship at all is, I think we should not even discuss that as part of step one, phase one of the program. And here, and I'll tell you this, once this window closes, say we set it for a year, let's say you go 2 years, the window closes, if you haven't come forward, no mercy. If you're still hiding out in the shadows, you're a bad guy.
And but what does that mean in terms of consequences?
That means that what we should do as American people is agree that if someone does not come forward during this window, that we employ all efforts, including allocating budgets to do this, to find these people and eject them from the country.
Okay, I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. You say then they should be evicted?
Yeah, ejected.
Well, man, this is a complicated issue. All right, so we treat them on the latter end the way we should have treated them on the former end by upholding the law at the latter end. Is that what I understand you to be saying?
Well, it's like this. They're here right now. Would you rather know who's here, or would you rather not know who's here?
Oh, of course. We should, as a nation, we should know who's here, but
so
not
how,
violating
so
the Fourth Amendment to the
U.S.
Constitution.
Right, but,
I hear what you're saying.
You're already,
you know, this is... Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
If they're here already, how do you find out who's here?
Oh, they could find out who's here. That's I mean, there's very little difficulty. If they wanted to, they could find out. They could find out through working. They could find out through earned income credit tax returns. They could find out through rents. I mean, there are a plethora of ways that they could discover who's here and where they are. Like the sanctuary cities, they could go there and start taking inventory. You are familiar with those, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I'm against sanctuary cities 100%. To me, we were sold. Everyone was sold a bill of garbage because, you know what, they sold that to us and said, well, look, these people are victims of crimes and they need to be able to come out and report their crimes. I think all they intended to do was to give a blanket of coverage for people to feel safe to be illegal. To me, that's a magnet. I agree that we need to turn off magnets. I don't want to give anyone who's here without any documentation any sort of government benefit. No welfare, no medical, no nothing.
And that's what I was just about to say. I don't know if you've been to the U.S. debt, usdebtclock.org, and if you haven't, you may want to go there. But that many people now. I've heard numbers of upwards of 20 million that are here. What sort of numbers have you heard?
I've heard anywhere from 11 to 20, but really, who knows? We don't know. And
Coulter has a book out called Adios America. Are you familiar with that book?
I haven't read it, but I'm familiar with who she is and what her positions are.
Yeah. Anyway, she uses a lot of statistics in that book, and it's actually it comes out a lot higher than 20 million. But at any rate, I hear what you're saying. It is a huge problem. I think the people who come here legally are particularly impacted. Not only that, but American citizens too. And I listened to Mexico, what is their position on illegal immigration? And it seems to me, and you can tell me how you feel, Mexico is very dual-faced on this particular issue, because I know they enforce their immigration laws very, very carefully and very stringently, while at the same time they petition America to very much relax their laws. So Mexico, the government of Mexico is in on this particular issue. You are aware of that, correct?
Well, it unfortunately, it's even deeper than that because, you know, I had I visited with a man who pretty much gave me an inside look at a coyote, the coyote guys, the people who actually transport them into the country. And I can just tell you that Mexico doesn't have to do a whole lot. I mean, on their end, they clear the way. Everyone's corrupt. And along our side, there's plenty of corruption as well. And until we cleanse...
How so? Please explain.
They get paid. They get paid for however many heads of people they allow to come through. Look the other way.
Who you said on the American side? Who mm-hmm. gets who's corrupt and gets paid on the American side?
Border Patrol, Sheriff Department, everyone along the way.
Interesting. Okay, I hadn't heard that particular angle, but so you're telling me the Border Patrol is aiding and abetting illegal immigration of Mexican and Central American citizens, because a lot of Central American citizens are also coming in, not just
absolutely
citizens.
They're coming in and they're, you know, they're coming through, and they're coming through checkpoints and they're people who are paid off. They look the other way, and so until, and look, this is not new. You go along the border, there's been corruption in McAllen, and of course I'm in Texas, and so I'm sure it exists at other places, but in particular here along our Texas border, that's what I know about. All of the elections down there are the Democrats dominate, and you know, I've known opponents who ran against that system, and it's deep. The corruption is deep. We don't even understand how deep it goes, and people are afraid.
Well, I'm sorry. I think we can. What do you think Trump will do if he gets in office? What do you think he will do regarding this particular issue?
I think, you know, number one, he says he's going to get Mexico to pay for a wall. So what he's going to immediately do is he's going to have to bash Mexico some way. He's going to have to cut trade deals, reduce terms on deals. He's going to have to make it seem as though that he's punishing Mexico. And Mexico is going to cry uncle and say, okay, we'll pay for the wall, or we'll pay for part of the wall. So that's one thing I think he's going to do is get real aggressive on the Mexican government. But, you know, you've got cartel who dominate in Mexico. The cartel runs the government. They own all the officials. So if you elect someone and it's a matter of time when they're corrupt or they're dead. So
let me ask you this. So you think that building that wall should be a prerequisite to any serious negotiation about, say, the idea, the plan that you explained earlier? And we will talk about financing the wall, because I know a good way to finance the wall, if Mexico won't pay directly, are, you know, take it out of their foreign aid. You know, a lot of foreign aid in terms of billions of dollars are shifted to Mexico per annum, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah, and I think he would employ any negotiating tactic he could to create the deficit to where Mexico felt obligated to pay for it, so that, you know, these terms can work again in their favor. And I think that's how he's going to operate. But, you know, going back to what type of, I don't know that it has to be a huge wall. We've got plenty of technology, you know, that we can use drones. I think we should move our military down to the border for desert training. Have permanent fixture. It's going to have to be this way. The old days of just letting it wide open ranges, it's just not going to fly anymore. We've got terrorists trying to come into our country. You know, we've got
right.
Major
I think that wall would be most. Most appropriate. And like I say, before any discussion, and I've heard this discussed politically before, and I somewhat concur with this, that before any serious discussions are held regarding some of the solutions that you offer, which may or may not be a bad position to take, but see, the point would be, if you do it, and several waves. In other words, Reagan allowed, he gave amnesty. Reagan issued amnesty. It was to a smaller number, but he did it, and he said that would be the last time. So I think mm-hmm. the wall should definitely go up because, you know, after a few years. Yeah, the wall should be in place, and I don't think anything is equivalent to the wall. I hear what you're talking about, virtual electronic fences. And I listened to Rush Limbaugh and Sean also. And one of the points they made, they said, well, why don't they put a virtual fence around the White House? A virtual fence is not the same as a fence.
Right.
Yeah, it's not the same.
But here's something that I want to touch on with this scenario. I've asked Senator Cruz before before he was a senator, we talked about the border and about immigration and these undocumented residents. And every time I said, well, what are we going to do with the undocumented? He said, well, we got to secure the border first. Nothing matters until we secure the border first. And I say this, the people who are hinged on that solution for what to do with those 11 to 20 million people, those people, they just want to know that you have a game plan, or they want to know what your strategy might be once the border is secure. And you know what? As long as they know that, yes, we're going to secure this border, and it's going to be the wall that we can all be proud of, like Trump says. But after we do this, we're going to provide this plan where we're going to allow people to come out of the shadow, so to speak. And there's no citizenship, just a temporary status. If we could just say that as a Republican Party, we would have, I think, huge shift within Hispanic support. People are going to say, okay, this is something that I can live with. This is something that sounds reasonable. Yes, we all want to secure that. Let's start working on that border. Let's start securing that border, building those walls. And oh, and by the way, we're gonna follow that up with a plan that looks like this. We're working on the details. This is what it's going to look like. And it kind of, look, people want them to pay a price. They want there to be a penalty. They want it to hurt and sting a little bit. I say we charge them $3,000 to $4,000 a piece.
Right.
Okay.
Now, if I may, jump in, because I have two issues. I want to address what you just said about the penalties and insuring the penalties, or can they be insured? And furthermore, which I think concerns a lot of Americans, is deeply, are the criminals. What about the illegal alien criminals, like the one that killed that lady, lady in San Francisco, Jamal Shah, and there were a number of others. Those are two that I just recall right off, that I immediately recall. What do you think should be done with those? And then we'll get to the issue, if you don't mind, of ensuring that the penalties or the sting for having broken the law can actually be enacted.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
go ahead.
So
I want to hear your response to those.
So the first issue is the type of people, if they're discovered during this, I'll call it a filtering process, I don't want to waste taxpayer dollars by putting them in prison. I don't want to waste taxpayer dollars by going through a lengthy court process. Deport them. Don't ever let them back in the country. If we have a wall or a security, then we can do that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. No, well, thank you. I appreciate that. No, now, just taking them across the border, and there was a, you know, it was racist. America has changed a lot over the last, I'm going to say, several decades, 40, 50, 60 years. So it's not the same America. I mean, some people still have problems, but it's not the same America. But under what they call Operation Wetback, and I don't mean to offend you, but I believe that was under the Eisenhower administration, what they would do for purposes of ensuring the people didn't turn around and just jump the border or whatever, just come right back, they would take way down, you know what they would do is take them way down to the southern end of Mexico and deport them there. What do you think about that for criminals, for people who commit violent crimes?
You know, I'm not opposed to making it as difficult as possible. I mean, if we have control of them and we can negotiate to have them sent as far away as possible, I'm okay with that.
Okay,
those people,
all right. I just want to.
Okay,
getting
are not
that's reasonable. Now, with respect to what I've heard people criticize regarding making the penalty sting is that none of that would work. They say, hey, they're poor people. They aren't going to pay the fines. They aren't going to learn English, particularly when you have these sanctuary cities. There's no incentive. There's no incentive for them to learn English. So what do you what do you say to the people that say the penalties won't work?
I say that people will be lined up to pay the penalty if it meant that they could continue to live in America, if they could come out and have the ability at that point to start their own business, to get a valid driver's license, to do the things and function as a normal person. You know, these people, they're all limited in some way or another. They all are. And I don't have sympathy, but I do empathize. You know, I understand that they made the choice. They made the choice to come here, put their family in the situation that their family's in, and they have to pay a price. We have to make them pay a price, or no one's going to allow any sort of documentation plan. So, look, I don't know exactly how to hold accountable someone paying making the payment for this, but if you gave someone a 12-month payout option, and or they put half down and pay the rest out in 12 months, who couldn't do that? And I'll tell you what, if someone didn't want to do that, I wouldn't want them here anyway. So it has to be high enough that people know that that is a sting, that it is painful, and yet you want it to be high enough that you can really keep the best and the brightest, so to speak, or the ones who really want to be here. Everyone else, they're not going to stay.
Yeah, well, you come across as a real reasonable guy, and I tell you what, I was just doing a little bit of research as usual, and I'll just hang out in the queue and listen to some other insightful ideas. I understand you have some other callers, right?
I've only got a few minutes left in the program, so I won't have any time. But I never did get your name. What was your name?
Oh, Mr. Solution.
Mr. Solution. Okay, off the right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you, and spread the word. That's our goal, is to have rational discussions. We don't need to argue.
Well, same here, sir. We'll keep coming on, and good talking with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Bye bye. So I'll put him back in the queue. We only have a few minutes. It's a great conversation, a perfect example of what we're really trying to accomplish on this difficult subject. How are we going to get more people to show up and vote? We have to give them reasons. And when we're talking about Hispanics, yes, economy is a big issue. Jobs are always a big issue. You got to make a living. But right after that, immigration. How are we going to connect with these people? What is our message going to be? As a Republican Party, we must, we have to have a solution. We cannot continue to avoid dealing with this. Now, tomorrow night, you're going to want to tune in again. This is going to be a really good show. I've got one of my old Air Force guys. I worked on nuclear missiles when I was in the Air Force, and one of our candidates, or a couple of our candidates, are talking about carpet bombing Muslims in the Middle East. And, I kind of have an idea of what that might look like. Some people want to know if our bombs can turn the sand in the Middle East into glass. I'm pretty certain I know that it can. We have the ability to. Question is, should we? Should we talk like this? What does it make us look like? Is that who the Republican Party is today? I don't think so. I really don't. And tomorrow night we're going to talk. You're going to talk with two guys with former nuclear missile experience, top secret security clearance. We know the kind of destruction that our country is capable of. And for presidential candidates to be speaking the way they are, it tells me, number one, they don't understand what war really is all about, and two, that they don't understand the power of the commander-in-chief, and when you make statements like that, how it affects us as a nation, the perception of us all around the world. So tune in tomorrow night. You're going to love that program. My friend Anthony James, I called him AJ back then, will be tuned in with us. Thank you, Mr. Solution, for calling in tonight. And then Thursday, we've got Dr. David Wallaloo. He will be joining us, and we're going to be talking all about, what did he say, poverty. Poverty's creeping up. Obama hasn't been so good for the country, folks. Democrats haven't been good for the country. It's time to make a change. I ask you to go to my Facebook page, The Duke Machado Show, and please like that page. Follow me on Twitter at Duke Machado 1, and tune in. We're here we're starting actually next month. Will be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon.